Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative is brought to you by Selz. That's SELZ.com. If you're looking for an alternative to PayPal that can be used to collect payments for digital products, physical products, and even services, Selz is a fantastic option. There's no programming, no special templates, or special themes needed. And they recently even added the ability to give your customers a pay-what-you-want option. Many of the Unmistakable Creative listeners are already using Selz and absolutely love the product.
In spite of all our communication technology, no invention is as effective as the sound of the human voice. When we hear the human voice, we instinctively want to listen in the hopes of understanding it, even when the speaker is searching for the right words to say. That's because the human voice resonates differently from everything else in the world. Is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. Listen in on candid conversations with creative entrepreneurs and insanely interesting people.
In this episode of the podcast, I speak with Bruce Poontip. Bruce is not your typical CEO of a travel company. Starting with nothing but his college credit cards, over the last 20 years, Bruce has built G-Adventures into a $250 million business. So listen in as he talks to me about the Loop Tail and his philosophies on life and business. Bruce, welcome to the Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. So Bruce, I came across you by way of actually one of my listeners, Gary Arndt, actually. He sent me your book. He said, hey, Srini, I think this would be right up your alley. And I remember reading the description and I thought, yeah, you pretty much nailed it. You really understand what I look for in a guest. I mean, you really do fit the whole, you know, label of being unmistakable. So I guess really where I want to start is really your story of, you know, how you built G-Adventures and how something like Loop Tail came to be.
Well, that's a long question. G-Adventures in itself has a 23-year history, and the story of how G-Adventures became a company and how we grew to where we are today is more of an entrepreneurial story. I mean, seeing, you know, I was 22 at the time and saw, you know, a need or had my own eureka moment to want to start a business. And at that time, it could have been anything. But over the course of 23 years, and the story, the incredible story in which we've, you know, gone from, you know, taking my college credit card and starting a business to being, you know, over $250 million in revenue, being the largest kind of small group of venture company in the world. I mean, that's the story itself is what motivated Loop Tail writing the book, because it's been such an incredible journey, and I wanted to kind of have a positive impact on others through my story. Mm-hmm. You know, starting the business, you know, and start why I started the business was, you know, like any other entrepreneur who, you know, gets out of school and sees that, you know, there's an industry that you know, has issues or has a problem, and you think you can do it better. And that's how I came to, you know, with G-Adventures, because I entered the travel industry. When I started G-Adventures, the world didn't need another travel company. So I had to create differentiation and create something unique enough that would be able to, you know, change the way people looked at their holiday time.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talk about this eureka moment, and I mean, it's funny, right? I was just having this conversation with somebody this morning. I think that there's something to be said for those moments. I think sometimes they come in very unusual ways. I mean, for me, it was in the form of an email from a friend who said that I should start this show because I had interviewed him for my other blog. But I think you know, recognizing those moments is really, really important. And I'm curious, you know, one, how you knew that was kind of one of those moments. And then, I mean, how do we take that in our own lives? How do we take advantage of our eureka moments and make sure we don't miss out on them?
I think you have to be, you know, fairly self-aware to know when opportunities are knocking. When destiny, you know, turns on the radio, you know, some people listen, some people don't. I mean, I'm a real believer that, you know, everyone has their opportunities before them, and everyone has, you know, their destiny and their place in the universe. And some people actively search and look and find their place in the universe, and a lot of people just don't care or aren't bothered and sleepwalk through life. And but I believe that everyone has a destiny, and there's people who pick up on those clues, and there's just people who don't. People who get it, and people who don't.
Mm-hmm. What do you think separates those two groups? I mean, do you think there's something inherently built into people that differentiates those two groups of people?
I think there's an argument, you know, between you know, whether, you know, you're, it's you know, nature or nurture, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I, you know, my mother always used to tell me, you know, don't waste your people on people that don't get it. You know, she used to say, there's two people in this world, my mother used to say, and it's people who get it and people who don't. And the people who don't is, it, you know, they're, you know, they're sold on their own destiny and their own, you know, where they, you know, want to be in the world. And we, you know, as entrepreneurs, we find people that, you know, want to believe in a story, want to believe in what we're doing, and want to believe that, you know, a company can change the world, or, you know, an idea can change the world. And that's part of their destiny as it is part of my destiny.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned your mother. You know, one of the things I love looking back at it is looking at early influences in somebody's life. I mean, was this something that you knew when you were a kid that you had some sort of destiny? And you know, I mean, what was your childhood like? I mean, growing up, I mean, what kinds of influences kind of led you to this point of saying, okay, you know what, I'm going to take out my college credit cards and I have it in me to do this?
It's very easy for me to say that, I always knew when I was very young. I certainly, you know, I started three companies before I turned 16. So I always knew that business was in my blood, and it was always something that I wanted to do. And it was always part of my, you know, what I say was my destiny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if, when I look back, there was a lot of things that happened in my life that made me, that you know, that it was very clear to me that I knew very early, you know, what I was meant to do. And then there's you know, I had three companies before I turned 16, and my first job was at McDonald's, and I got fired after 2 weeks. and then got fired at McDonald's. So I got fired from Denny's McDonald's. And that's at the age of 16, that was tragic, but it was all part of my story, right? It was all part of, you know, everything that made me what I am. And it was, and I knew that the only time I'd been successful was when I'd started businesses prior to turning 16. And so that's what I focused on, you know, what I knew and what I was successful at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what started, you know, had me looking for ideas of a company to start when I was, you know, 22 years old.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can relate to the McDonald's thing because my first job in high school was working at McDonald's, coincidentally.
And was it a great working experience?
Okay, so I happened to work for the one and only. I'm pretty sure, you know, when you watch the movies and you see Jamaican people, they're pretty laid back. You know, you see, like, you're thinking Bob Marley, Rastafarians. And I think I worked with the only angry Jamaican person on the entire planet because she was vicious. I mean, she was pissed off all the time. Like, I was terrified of her. She was my manager at McDonald's.
Wow. I mean, I didn't even make it past the training program at McDonald's. I got fired during the training program, so better than me because you made it on the floor.
Yeah, I lasted 8 months. That was probably one of the most humbling experiences of my life to go and work in an environment like that. You know, I think, you know, despite the fact that, you know, I knew that that was not my career, one of the things that gave me a deep appreciation for is the fact that, you know, we complain about our lives in so many ways, but, like, when I looked at that and I saw, wow, some of these people here are basically going to make their entire living. This is how they survive. And I have the gift of being able to go get an education. And I realized how much we take so many things for granted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a big thread that I want to get across in my book, in Loop Tail, about how we take a lot of things for granted every day.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the cues, and those are the notes that we have to remember when we, you know, when people look for their place in the universe, and believing in your destiny, and believing that, you know, there's a higher purpose for what you do or whatever it is you do, in whatever field, or whether it's you know, whether you're working for someone or whether you're an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone has their place in the universe and our destinies before us. And I just believe that, and more so in business,
mm-hmm.
right? We're actually running a business, and, you know, we're evidence of that success.
So before we get into Loop Tail and G Adventures, I want to actually start with your high school businesses because you actually jogged my memory, and I remember reading about them, and I remember that was one of the funniest parts of the book. So I'm not going to let you off the hook without telling us about some of those businesses and your classmates. That story it brought a smile to my face because it was so funny.
My first business was back in the days when home newspapers were being delivered, and you had to be 12 years old to have a newspaper, and a newspaper route, and I thought that was just the golden ticket to making money, would be getting a newspaper route. But I was 11, so I had to wait. And so when I turned 12, I applied for paper routes in various areas of the city, so I could have multiple routes. And I and then I subcontracted them to 11-year-olds who couldn't get newspaper routes yet. And I used to split the profits with them. And so it was, you know, that was the first thing. That, and then the next one was, you know, a rabbit business. When I, you know, came to the, my eureka moment was, you know, people buy rabbits when they're tiny, furry, cute little bunnies, but then they grow up to be, you know, quite, you know, livestock. Mm-hmm. They're no longer cute anymore. So I saw and read about a breed of rabbit out of the Netherlands called the Dutch dwarfs. They're dwarf rabbits that never grew. And so I imported them into Alberta and started breeding them and selling them at pet stores. And then my next business was a bookmark business, which I did with a junior achievement program, which was offered in my school. So, you know, I was always quite business focused. Like and I was quite odd. My parents were very concerned that I was doing these things when, you know, my brothers, you know, were playing hockey or, you know, doing swimming and doing other sports. And I was, you know, I was interested in doing after-school programs, starting a business. Uh-huh. But to me, it was the most natural thing in the world.
Well, I remember you saying something about the rabbit business. Like, you had classmates who were really pissed off at you because the rabbits died or something along those lines. I remember that very distinctly, and that made me laugh so hard when I was reading the book.
No, you know, yeah, it was kind of making a reference of Facebook because I haven't been on Facebook.
That's right.
Recently, and the guys in our marketing department were doing a promotion where they registered me on Facebook for a day to do some kind of contest, and within minutes, you know, I got flooded with all these people that wanted to. You know, I sat behind you in grade four, and I knew you when you were, you know, 12 years old, living on this street, whatever. People were kind of making contact. And then I got an email from someone that said, you sold me a rabbit many years ago that turned out to be the worst pet ever. Now we should be friends on Facebook. Facebook, that was my first introduction to Facebook, and then immediately canceled the account after that, actually. And I've been on Facebook for years, and just for the book, we have a Facebook account up now.
All right, perfect. Well, let's get into Looptail and building G Adventures. I mean, you started a company with a bunch of credit cards. I mean, from reading Looptail, I don't get the sense that this was sort of like the easiest journey by any stretch of the imagination. I saw a lot of ups and downs and moments in which this whole thing could have fallen apart, it seems like. I mean, multiple times. And so I'd love for you to walk us through sort of those moments and you know, how you overcame them. And, I mean, how your philosophy as a leader and, you know, the way you approach business is very, very refreshing. It's so different than anything I've come across. I mean, you've always, from what I've seen, been willing to challenge the status quo and do things despite the fact that they might not make you very popular.
Oh yeah, I mean that's part of being part of being an entrepreneur, but part of being innovation has a lot to do with, you know, the self confidence to put things in front of people that they didn't even know they wanted. Mm-hmm. And at times that's you can be very popular, and at times you can be very unpopular. And that doesn't change your decision with progressing though.
Mm-hmm. So, go ahead, sorry.
No, I mean for me, when I, you know, starting the company, there was never a point where, you know, I thought that it was going to be easy. I mean, entrepreneurs have their ups and downs. In my case, you know, because we were so self-funded and you know bootstrapped our way for so long, like, people have to understand, like, G Adventures is 23 years old. I've been doing this for quite a long time, so it's not a quick success story. But I was very passionate and motivated. And it's what got me through those difficult times.
Mm-hmm. I mean, let me ask you, in those difficult times, I mean, are there specific moments that you recall that, you know, you really saw a sort of defining moments that basically kind of, you know, shaped this entire philosophy of the Looptail?
Yeah, I mean, the defining moment for me was that where the book opens, when I'm in Tibet in March 14th. 1997. It is the exact date. That is really the defining moment for me, when I knew that, you know, I went to Bhutan during that trip as well, where I saw, you know, the idea of gross national happiness, which has been developed by the king at that point. And then I went through the spiritual journey through Tibet, which, you know, showed that how Tibet has lived for so many centuries as a country that makes its decisions based on oracles and, you know, karma. And, you know, and even though I was, you know, my mind wasn't wired that way, and it still isn't to a certain extent, the idea, you know, really resonated with me. And, you know, it was one of those things that it changed the way I thought about my life. And then it was natural that it would change the extension, you know, of my business, how I looked at my business. Because at that point, you know, when you're in the trenches of starting a business, especially when you're bootstrapping from credit cards, your life is your business. So when your life changes, your business changes as well.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you brought up the spiritual journey, and I can honestly tell you, you know, one of the things I could easily find as a common thread between our guests here on this show is a spiritual journey of some sort. And it happens in many forms. I mean, for one of our former guests, it happened by going to prison for 2 years. I mean, that was one of the most enlightening experiences of her life. For me personally, you know, learning how to surf has been the ultimate spiritual journey. I mean, chasing waves has become such a defining part of my life. I guess, you know, where I'm going with this is do you think that in order to really find what we're meant to do in this world, a spiritual journey is actually essential?
I think everyone has their own path, I'll be honest with you. I mean, people don't necessarily have to, you know, face hardships to be successful. I think we all have our own defining paths. I think some roads are lumpier than others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't compare the two either. I get that people want to often, especially people who read my book, they want to compare, you know, often their experience. And you know, it's easy to relate to almost anybody's experience, but comparing might not be the right thing to do when we all just have different paths.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can all relate to the journey we all take in life to get to find our own higher purpose. But at the same time, the appreciation of the diversity of other people's paths is what makes the world great. You know, the diversity of different people and different ways people get to where they need to go. But your journey, I'm sure, is just as enlightening, but just in a very different way.
Yeah, I would say, I think it's really, I'm glad you brought up this idea of comparison, because it's almost an epidemic at this point, given sort of how publicly our lives are on display. I think we really, this is something that I personally have struggled with, because, you know, I spend all my days talking to people like you, and I always, you know, my business partner said, he's like, this completely warps your entire perspective on the world. He said, you're talking to the upper echelon of people who achieve things. He said, and if that's your basis for comparison, and you're always going to feel out of your league.
Yeah, I mean that's a very dangerous road. I mean, I can't tell you how many, especially since the book has come out, I get letters from people which I'd never received before that. Unfortunately, I can't reply to them all, but I mean, it's you know, the idea of inspiring someone by writing my book, there's a whole league of people that it might not have that positive an effect if they spend their time comparing.
Mm-hmm,
because,
mm-hmm.
You know, as I said, everyone's road is different. And the great thing about that is, you know, the celebration of diversity, you know, the way that we get there. I mean, you don't have to have, you know, hardships to find success. You know, that's some people's paths. And some people have, you know, really great family lives and really great, you know, communities to help support them, and they become equally successful as people who, you know, come from more difficult circumstances and have to rise above adversity to become successful.
Mm-hmm.
All those things make up, you know, but in the end, it's about finding your own individual path. And you're an individual. Everyone's individual. Everyone's their own person, and that's why it makes it. So there's no reason why anyone's path should be compared.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
Nothing more to add to that.
Oh, okay. I think you bring up a really, you know, it's an interesting point, because, I mean, even when I talk to people here and you know, our listeners write in, I always have to say, you need to take everything our guests say with a grain of salt, and also realize that I always say that the point of what you're learning here is to adapt it to your own particular situation, model rather than mimic it, because you're right. I mean, if we could, I don't, you know, we jokingly said there is not a single single guest who has told me, I read the 4-hour work week and I followed this 4-step formula and that's how I ended up here. Every single person that I have talked to tells me a different story.
Yeah, I mean, you just hope that you get something out of it, mm-hmm. that you can relate back to your own existence. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. I mean, you know, when I took some time in the last week to read some of the reviews, which, you know, I was avoiding reviews. I was determined to avoid reviews for my book, but they were, you know, which surprisingly, my book has gotten such amazing reviews, but I didn't expect that, of course. Not being a writer, putting out a book was quite a daunting task, but, you know, the reviews have been so positive that I went to kind of read them. And I, you know, and the people that really didn't get the book to a certain extent didn't necessarily, it's the people that compared it directly to their lives and what it could benefit their lives, how it could benefit their lives directly. And, you know, but the people who kind of, you look, read books or read or listen to your podcast to try to get an influence or to try to hear about how other people find their way are the people that really find success. I mean, those are people that define themselves by becoming better people or, you know, better, stronger, or faster at whatever it is they do, but by being coachable, by be able to listen or read and be influenced by how other people are finding their way in the world, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not the people looking for, the people that are looking for that direct beeline, you know, A to B, direct line to success, are the ones that set themselves up to fail for failure. And they listen to things and they read things wanting, you know, a direct, you know, manual on how to get there. Mm-hmm. And there just isn't one.
Yeah, I mean, I always say straight and narrow paths very rarely lead to interesting destinations.
Exactly, very true.
So let's do this. Let's shift gears a little bit. I want to start getting into sort of the idea of Looptail and what this means. I mean, you know, the way I understood the book and the way I interpreted the book is that the Looptail really is a framework for leadership and building organizations in the 21st century. And I'd love for you to expand and talk to us about sort of the elements of that framework and sort of, you know, what are the implications for us as we go about approaching our lives, our businesses, and everything else?
Well, I think the original tagline for Looptail is why community, culture, and karma matter in business. And what that really means is how people look at their lives and how they look at their businesses, you know, today. And when we have this social revolution upon us that's bringing, you know, a level of transparency between those two worlds. Yet we come from the industrial age many years ago where we were taught to, you know, separate work and personal life. You know, people separate their work, like, you know, your work is over here, and it's you work to live, and then you, on this side, you live your life separate from your work, which is a horrible way to live. And then today, with the social tools that are at everyone's disposal, and the way people are becoming so connected, it's become very weird that people keep these two things separated, because they're not finding passion in what they do. They're not finding purpose in what they do, regardless of what it is you do. I mean, as I said, you don't have to be an entrepreneur or start a huge company. You can, you know, work for, you know, an exciting company, but just be passionate in what its purpose is, and whether that's, you know, Federal Express doing courier delivery, or whether that's, you know, Apple putting, you know, in, you know, new devices in people's hands and making people's lives easier through technology. These are all things that you find your purpose in contributing towards. And so, you know, Looptail is about how, you know, you shouldn't look at your business any different on how you would look at your life. And, you know, when people look at their lives, they you know, people are living more sustainably. People are, you know, we're recycling at home. We're using low-watt light bulbs at home. Yet when they go on vacation, they suspend those beliefs and they go on a cruise ship or a compound resort holiday where no money stays in the local country and doesn't have local benefit. There's that disconnect that kind of caters to that idea that work and life are imbalanced. Mm-hmm. So when people talk about work-life balance, they talk about not working as much so you can, as I said, you can work to live. And when you do the math and think about how much time you actually spend at work on a daily basis, not just working itself, but also waking up in the morning, getting ready for work, commuting to work, you know, getting home from work, all of those things that you do, it's a majority of your life. So you should pursue some form of passion and purpose with whatever you do. And so, you know, for me, Looptail goes further than that because it's an entrepreneurial story and how we incorporated that in our business. And when you look at your life, when you act a certain way, in your life in terms of treating people how you'd want to be treated, and then doing that in your business, because business shouldn't be any different. Mm-hmm. You know, paying it forward. You know, but the idea of karma, you know, karma is a very spiritual word, but in business it means that, you know, whenever something bad happens to people, you know, you often hear that expression, oh, you know, they'll get theirs one day, or, you know, they'll, you know, karma is, you know, karma will come back to them, or whatever, those kind of expressions. But business shouldn't be any different. You know, we should look at how our businesses impact people, planet, and profit, as well as creating passion, purpose, and happiness with anyone who touches your brand. It creates that differentiation with the company that didn't exist before, because people didn't have the social tools to engage with customers and with companies like they do today. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a very different world. And companies that engage in and create that transparency and that relationship with their customers, engaging in that higher purpose of their business, are the ones that will survive, and the brands that will survive in the future. And, you know, the Looptail is a philosophy about how we've taken those social tools and the relationships we have with our customers and created a higher purpose around redefining how people look at travel. Mm-hmm. And it can be used on any business. Like, any business can think the same way. And I give some examples. Like Nike, you know, in the early days, when Nike wanted to sell you clothes, they hired Michael Jordan. They put on these amazing commercials. And when you walked into a store, you felt a certain way because that you remembered the commercial in your mind. And so it triggered you to buy Nike products. But today, to be engaged to the Nike brand, you can follow their employees on Twitter. You can follow their CEO on Twitter or on Facebook. You can follow their factories in China. They have Facebook pages or Twitter pages. The employees that work at those factories have the ability to be on Twitter. There's a transparency and an engagement with brands that's on another level, and a social level. And everyone's trying to, and now brands have a personality, and they're not just, it's just not a one-way relationship. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, brands put up commercials that made you feel a certain way, but it was one-way communication. But now consumers can communicate back, and they want that two-way relationship, and it's a much more intimate relationship. In order to mean anything to your customers now, you have to strive for your brand to mean something more than just its product. You have to transcend what you do and create a product that, you know, that engages your customers to a much higher purpose than what you do. And that's, you know, the whole philosophy behind Looptail.
Let's take a short break and thank today's other sponsor, Audible. Audible is offering Unmistakable Creative listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial. Pick up a free copy of Looptail, How One Company Changed the World by Reinventing Business, written by today's guest, Bruce Poontip. Visit audiblepodcast.com/creative and start your free trial today. So I love it. I mean, and this is why I wanted to have you on the show, because I think this is so fundamental I don't care whether you're an artist, whether you're, you know, an individual creator. I mean, all of this matters. I want to do a bit more digging into this idea of community culture and karma. I mean, you guys have been doing this since before we had all these social tools. It's kind of a bedrock part of the way you operate. I mean, I remember one of the things that stood out to me is kind of the way you decided to run your tours everything is about putting back into the systems in which you're profiting from. Like, I mean, all your tour guides. I love how you have, you know, local CEOs. And I was wondering, can you talk about community and how you guys have embraced that, not just on the web, but in terms of the locations where, share some of the examples, of where you've done this in your life, because I feel like you've done this long before we had the social web.
Yeah. I mean, but before, I mean, it was very different. You know, we were seen as more of an underground, and we were growing before, you know, the last 7 years when, you know, that we became much bigger because of, you know, with social tools. But I mean, we've been doing it for a very long time. And, you know, in many ways it was a labor of love when it first started, because it made sense with the authentic experiences we wanted to create for our customers. But our first customers were quite hardcore travelers that thought of us as the best kept secret. You know, they liked knowing about us, but us not necessarily putting it in the forefront of what we did. We were this cool, unique idea, and even though we were growing still by double digit for, you know, in during that time, our customers had an intimate relationship with us, but it was on a very different level. Mm-hmm. When we started growing in the last 10 years, where people started taking our trips, you know, for the first time, you know, we were getting families who last year took a Disney cruise and suddenly were with us in Mongolia because their neighbors did it. That was a whole other market for us. That was a whole other side of the travel business, the mainstream travel business that we were professing for years for people to get off cruise ships and get out of compound resorts and have local impact and positive impact on people's lives locally when they travel. And then this greater philosophy that travel can be the greatest form of wealth distribution that the world's ever seen if it's done right, and local communities benefit from people traveling. Like, this holistic approach to travel was something that, you know, the world had never seen, or a travel company with that kind of message. But in order to accomplish that, we had to create these local benefits or local community relationships and include local communities in our success as we grew. Because we're huge now compared to where we were creating those relationships 10 years ago. You know, we'll run 18,000 tours this year. 18,000 trips will depart this year with passengers for us. And that's in over 100 countries around the world. So in order for us to be successful on that level, at the grassroots level that we are, we have to have a dialogue with local communities, and we have to have a positive impact where we run tours. So we have our foundation, which is the Planetera, and the Planetera Foundation, and we build community projects around the world. We have about 40 projects around the world, whether they're street kids' homes or women's weaving projects, children's day schools. We have New Hope in Cambodia. We have eye hospitals, which do corrective surgeries for people that need cataract surgeries. All of these things are projects that are linked and funded by our travelers, but it's to create a local benefit in order for us to preserve the authentic experiences that we promise our customers when they travel with us as well. And changing the way people look at their holiday time and align it more with how we're living our lives more today. Because I said, we're all living more sustainable at home. We're recycling, and as I mentioned before, we're also eating 100-mile diets, organic, all of these things in which we change. Our holiday time should not be any different. We shouldn't suspend our thoughts because we're going to another country. Mm-hmm. And we should consider where we're going and having a positive impact. And just imagine if we got to a place in the world where your yearly giving back would be going on holidays. Mm-hmm. Like, imagine that. Like, I mean, that's my idea of, we all kind of save money and, give a certain percentage of our salary. We want to do something as good human beings. We want to do something good. And so you donate money to your local NGO that, makes you feel better, whether it's animal rights or human rights or the environment, whatever it is your cause is. But imagine if you could put all those things together and save all of your money and go on holiday and have that feeling of giving back when you went on holiday. And that's what, the purpose of G-Adventures is anyways. And that was the story of the philosophy we built around Looptail. I wanted to extend out to other companies around how that philosophy works.
Mm-hmm. Well, probably my favorite thing that you said in all of that is thinking of travel as the greatest form of wealth distribution ever. That's actually such a touching sentiment because, I mean, if you look at it, clearly there's severe income inequality when we look at the world. And what's coming for me from listening to that, I mean, is when I look at the internet, I tell people, it's like the internet is like a developing country. And I guess there's two questions that come from everything you've just said. One is around the sort of branding aspect of things. I mean, you guys were known as sort of this cool, hip, underground thing, and then you sort of become mainstream. And I wonder, how you maintain, how do you maintain sort of the authenticity, integrity of what you originally stood for when you sort of become mainstream, I think it sounds to me like there's sort of almost a coolness factor with being associated with G-Adventures for those early customers. And I wonder how you keep that going. And then, of course, the other thing is that, as people who are internet entrepreneurs, and when I watch what's going on in the web, to some degree, it saddens me because I realize there is severe income distribution or severe income inequality. We're not, really distributing the wealth equally. And I'm wondering, are the things that we can take from the Looptail and apply to what we're doing in this online world?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's everything. I mean, it's about connectedness and creating community, right? Mm-hmm. And striving for a higher purpose in whatever it is you do. I mean, those are the keys. And those are also the key drivers of our business. We created this business model of happiness where, what drives human happiness outside of consuming. And that is, connectedness, being part of something greater than yourself. Creating all those things as the core principles of your business, and all those things are the core principle of your decision-making from the start, is the best way to start companies, because it's about that engagement with your customers. And the modern consumer in the modern social world, who has a much more intense and intimate relationship with any brand or company, You know, there's so many companies right now. You know, since the book has come out, I've been asked to come and speak to, you know, governments and, you know, different, you know, counselors in different regions, because everyone wants to try, or even, and also businesses, because people want to try and retrofit their business to kind of suit the modern kind of way people are consuming today or engaging. But you know, the you know, with my book, I wanted people to inspire people to put that at the forefront of the, you know, in of the incubation stage of when you're, you know, you're starting a business, mm-hmm. and how you look at you engage people online with internet businesses, because you want to create connectedness, like, you know, originally even with the internet, the relationship was always one way. It was a one-way relationship. With customers, where, you know, you sell customers product, you offer fantastic service, and get it to them quickly and on time, and then you get a loyal repeat customers. But they want more. Customers are now wanting more. There's those customers that are becoming lifestyle brands that are engaging and meaning something and making their lives better outside of just supplying their product.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Let me ask you this. Let's talk briefly about culture, because, I mean, one of the things that I know from knowing what I do about you is, I mean, you've made some very distinctive choices in how you've built a culture. And I'd love for you to expand on that. I mean, and kind of, you know, what are the implications for us going forward about culture? I mean, what does culture mean to you? And you know, what do we have to think about as we're going forward with what we're doing?
I mean, company culture is, you know, something that comes from the top down. So it starts off with how you're recruiting the people that you bring on, and defining how you're going to, you know, run your business around, you know, your defined core values, and your company culture flows out of that. And again, it then becomes a part of your brand and becomes a part of your company, because it becomes a part of how people relate to you. Because people, you know, our company has a very distinct and defined company culture, but there's many people that, you know, think we're kind of crazy and kind of, you know, hippies, or, you know, I had someone, I was doing a web thing for travel agents the other day, a webinar, and an agent hung up the phone saying, "Oh, this sounds way too political," and just hung up the phone. I mean, and that's fine. I mean, and there's, you know, when you stand for something, or you know, you go out on a limb by putting your company culture and the transparency of your business forward, you have to expect that there's a chance it'll polarize people as well. And so company culture comes from, you know, and by the way, that's also very contrary to how, you know, many people grew up believing on how you know, build a business. You know, people try and build a business by being everything to everyone, by being as generic as possible in how you define yourself. You can, you know, cater, you know, your company to as many markets as possible, or be available or interesting to as many people as possible. It just doesn't work like that today. When you know, because any company that, you know, tries to be everything for anyone and doesn't stand for anything means very little to the modern consumer. Means nothing, really. Mm-hmm. So it's the companies that really go out on a limb and stand for something, because people relate to your company on an intrinsic level. And that's sort of the people that become loyal, you know, loyal to your brand, and truly become ravers. We call them ravers. People who really, you know, 73% of people who take one of our trips becomes a raver. Meaning they don't just passively love their trip or love the company. They actively go out and want to talk about it to their friends, or write about it, or tell people, you know, that they should, you know, take a trip with us, or they should, you know, they want to tell stories about, you know, the trip they took with us. So, I mean, those, building that kind of army of, you know, marketing partners, if you will, is really how we've become successful. So when I say so quickly, in the last, you know, 7 to 8 years, where we've seen, you know, phenomenal growth, it's because we've been able to engage those customers in a very different way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny, because, I mean, we're talking about this in the context of a massive company, but I think that this actually is just as relevant if you're an artist, you know, who's got a gallery you're opening, and you want people to buy your art, or whether you're an author who wants people to read your books. I think the same principles apply.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, that's a very, very good point. And there's a point in the book where I also talk about how, you know, entrepreneurs are the artists of the business community in many ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, because, you know, when you create a business, and when it becomes part of, you know, and if you want to drive company culture as your company culture as part of your, you know, brand offering, it becomes a very personal piece of work. because it ends up becoming very much tied to your personality. It becomes a part of you. It's, and there's no avoiding it either. Like, you know, when you get people that, you know, that are not as necessarily, I won't say bad people, but people who aren't as necessarily switched on to the outside of the idea of just making money in a business, the business comes across that way to the consumer today because of that transparency. And you can see businesses reeling backwards, trying to change their story and trying to change the way they talk to consumers, whereas just 5 years ago, all they cared about is you spending as much as you could in their stores. Mm-hmm. Because they're trying to engage those customers. But, you know, any size business is relevant to, but, you know, it's a creative process. It's a creative process, very much like an artist, which you mentioned. I mean, I don't think it's any different. And I get, you know, I've had people, you know, especially artists actually, or musicians. I don't think it's any different, you know, when you're starting a company. It's any different than writing a song or doing a painting or, you know, that working on a sculpture. You're building and you're creating something from your own mind. Mm-hmm. And you're creating a business or you're creating something that comes from your heart and it represents your, you know, your being, your soul, when you put it out there like that. And Looptail, the book, was an extremely difficult process for me to actually put it out. I pulled the plug a couple times over the course of the year on doing it. I just couldn't bring myself to do it at some point because it was such a personal road to take with getting my story out and, you know, going to another level in terms of, you know, creating that relationship with our customers or readers or people who are interested in our story. But I also knew the positive impact it had, and that outweighed kind of my own intrepidation. But, you know, being an artist and entrepreneur are very similar in so many ways. So for you to mention that, I mean, when you go to any kind of business function with Fortune 500 companies, you always see the entrepreneurs in the corner of the room. And they're the awkward ones that are usually in jeans and, you know, a hoodie and wearing, you know, sneakers. And those are the entrepreneurs in the business community. Mm-hmm. And they're just very different. They think differently. But, you know, but as entrepreneurs, we're very creative, but we're also profit-driven. We're also creative. We're also interested in market share and being aggressive in the business world, but we just do it and we think very differently.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you brought up the book in the process. So let's shift gears a little bit. I want to talk briefly about the actual writing process for the book and then we'll start wrapping things up. I mean, you've said a handful of times throughout this conversation, I'm not a writer, and now you have a best-selling book, which is kind of an oxymoron in my opinion, but talk to me about that. I mean, you know, finding your voice through this process. I mean, obviously you had an amazing story to tell, but translating it, that doesn't always happen easily for most people, and I'm curious what that's been like for you.
Well, you know, it's been a long process, and the decision to want to write the book, and then getting a book agent and going through publishers, and then they're getting their view of what they wanted, you know, wanted the book to be compared to what I wanted it to be, and then physically having to write it. I mean, having to write the book in itself was, as I said, I'm not a writer, so it didn't come naturally for me. And, you know, I had an editor that worked with me that really pushed me and, you know, and told me, you know, where I needed to, you know, add things and take things out and clean everything up and add things when, you know, to smooth out, you know, to make it a story. And so that's the technical, you know, side of the writing. You know, I wasn't motivated to do so much writing either because I'm not naturally a writer. But you know what? In the end, one thing I say in the book is entrepreneurs are some of the best storytellers in the world. And, you know, I am a phenomenal storyteller. But that doesn't necessarily make me a good writer. So I just had to find a way to get that story out. And then the personal road to getting it actually out and, the you know, writing it, you know, you quite often think, like, who the heck wants to read this stuff? Like, who's the audience for this? Like, who's going to buy this? And, you know, the publishers gave me such big advances in the end because it was a bit of a bidding war when I decided to write it that, you know, now I suddenly feel pressured to deliver because in order for them to make their money, you know, I'm a businessman, right? When I go into partnerships, I want both sides to make money. I want them to be successful too. And so I better write a good book. And then that push and pull with the publishers to get that right balance of what I want and what they want through an editing process. And then actually putting it out and going on, you know, the New York Times bestseller list was a was phenomenal. Like, I mean, I can't even describe that feeling. And then, as I mentioned earlier, a week ago, just I actually went through some of, you know, people reviewing it on Amazon and different websites, and just seeing how people are, you know, getting positively impacted by the book. It's just been an amazing experience, actually, but one that has taught me a lot, but it was so not natural for me. So it pushed and challenged me in the right ways. And I think I've really grown from it. You know, I don't think I'll ever do that again. I don't think I'll write a book again. And I was, you know, so adamant about it being in my own voice that as well. And so originally I tried to, you know, hire a ghostwriter, and that didn't work out. And then having to plow through it and really come up with, you know, and also be honest, and, you know, because the publishers wanted a business book. You know, I was a cross between more like a, you know, a inspiration kind of memoir kind of book, I would say. Mm-hmm. And then people wanted it to be more like a self-help kind of book. And then the Dalai Lama got involved. The Dalai Lama wanted to write the foreword, and that put it on another level in terms of a level of interest for people with the book. So, you know, all of those things came together, and over a course of a very long time, it was over 2 years, and it was the perfect storm. And then when it came out, it was, you know, an immediate success, which has been very rewarding. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think this is great. I mean, it's funny, you know, a lot of our authors will often compare writing a book to giving childbirth. It's quite a painful experience. And I love that you use the analogy of the perfect storm, because I think a lot of things have to happen for a book to come together. And I really appreciate that you know, you mentioned this idea of wanting to do it in your own voice, because I think you definitely achieved that. I think you've done something very interesting with this book. I mean, for those of you guys listening, if you haven't picked it up, somehow you managed to blend all those genres of memoir, you know, business book, and, you know, self-help all together in a very compelling way that, to me, you know, like I said, I think it was Gary Arndt who said, hey, Srini, there's this book, you might want to talk to Bruce on your show. And it definitely stood out to me. And I can tell you, I get a lot of books, and I don't always say yes, especially when they're just standard business books, but this definitely, you know, it piqued my interest.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because a lot of people have said that, because it was the confluence of a lot of influences. Because I had two publishers, which were very aggressive, which was, you know, I'm from Canada, so my story is obviously most well known here. So the Canadian publishers had a completely different idea, because everyone in Canada knows me. I'm a kind of a bit of a famous success story here. So they want more memoir, right? Mm-hmm. They want more story. They want more personal stuff about me, the person. The U.S. publishers didn't care about me, the person. They want business. They want dollars and cents. They want learnings and lessons for entrepreneurs and business people. They want a business book. And then me, on the inside, I want to inspire people. You know, I want to help people become, you know, stronger and better versions of themselves by, you know, compounding their growth and their experiences. And I wanted to have that positive impact. And everyone kind of got their wish with this book in the end, and I didn't realize it was so unique until it kind of came out and people started saying things like you just said, which thank you very much. It's been overwhelming, actually, with the response on just the book outside of it, the impact on my business, or it just people's immediate impact on how they read the book, and how I'm saying exactly what you said, actually. That it stood out amongst other business books or other books that were on their desk. You know, I've heard that from professors, people who bought, you know, 50 copies to give to all their employees or whatever, that it just was, it touched them in a way that they, and many couldn't explain, but, or in a way that they wanted to share it. And I couldn't ask for a better, you know, I couldn't ask for more than that. I mean, when I put this book out, the day this book came out, it was a horrible 2 weeks leading up to the release date in September. I was just thinking, like, who the heck is going to buy this book? Like, it just sounds like me driveling on and on and whining the whole time about this and that. I said, people are going to think I'm the biggest whiner. I wanted it to be about overcoming adversity and, you know, overcoming obstacles and, you know, keeping your eye on the prize and, you know, building winning teams and all those things that make companies great and make people great. I wanted that book to have that influence. But in the process, you know, I have to talk about our ups and downs, as you've mentioned. It was my biggest fear that people think, oh, this is just, you know, he just comes across as such a whiner. Look how much success he has. But he goes back to talk about this and that, and just being, you know, complaining about everything. But luckily that didn't happen.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think that what you're feeling is what every artist feels when they put their work out into the world.
Sure, yeah.
That's you know, I mean, I had a woman here who's been writing for 20 years, and she says, I feel that, you know, she says, you know, every morning you have to give yourself permission.
Yes. I mean, that there's something said about that. That's almost, that there's a bit about that in the karma side in terms of meditation, mm-hmm. the meditation side. If you know, I'm big into yoga and meditation, but that comes onto the self-help side. But you're totally right. Every day, I mean, every day is your ability to make, you know, every day count. Mm-hmm. And you know, what are you going to do today for tomorrow? All of those things and those questions are about, you know, your permission. I mean, taking advantage of every opportunity. And, you know, remembering where you came from and building on all of that to make yourself a better version of yourself every day. I mean, I always say that. And your company shouldn't be treated any differently. Mm-hmm.
So, Bruce, I'm going to wrap our chat with one final question for you. You know, you've built something from the ground up and clearly been very successful at it. I mean, you know, you've talked about many peers. I mean, even some of the people who, you know, wrote the back of the book. I mean, like, you know, wrote the testimonials in the back of the book are people like Alexis Ohanian from Reddit. And, I mean, in the years that you've, you know, seen other entrepreneurs and people who start big projects and build things from the ground up, you know, I keep seeing this pattern, and I've asked this question to hundreds of people, and maybe it's, I jokingly call it for the research for the book that I don't know I'm going to write, but what do you think it is that distinguishes the people who actually achieve what they're setting out to do from the ones who don't?
I don't know if I understand the question fully. Can I just ask?
Let me be a bit more clear. So, I mean, I think there's two groups of people: those who try, who set out with the best of intentions, hoping to accomplish something big, and then there's a group, and they don't get there. And then there's a group who basically does it, and they get there. They get to where they want to go. And I'm curious what you think is the difference between those two groups.
I think there's life experience and awareness. I mean, I think that there's a lot of people that have. That want to get somewhere, but want to get there too fast, or they don't have patience in which they want to achieve something, and that comes with a lack of awareness of, you know, what you're capable of at the time, or what you're capable of, you know, presently, as opposed to what you'll be capable of 5 years from now or 2 years from now, depending on how you look. So, you know, people who, you know, put their heart and soul into everything that they do, and, you know, are really, you know, committed and conscientious, no matter what it is you do, whether it's just shopping for groceries, or whether it's, you know, doing a report in school, or whether it's the job that you do. I think that we're in a generation of entitlement. I think there's a huge amount of entitlement with, you know, the generation that's coming, the younger generation today, and I'm tough, sounding like my father now, you kids today, but there's a certain set that people have expectations that they expect that they should be successful because they just work hard or because they have great ideas. And, you know, I always tell people like that, you know what? Great ideas are a dime a dozen. You know, there's tons of unemployed people that have great ideas. You know, the skill is in the execution, on how you execute your ideas and how you execute your life. And in order to do that, you have to be extremely open and gracious and be able to accept everything that comes your way with an open heart, and continually challenge yourself at the right time to be able to grow and to take things on when it's the right time for you in order to get you to that next level. Every step you take will get you to the eventual finish line. It's people that want to be at the finish line before they put in the work before they put in, you know, the hours or the hard work that really never really come to fruition, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. they want to get there before they... And they don't see the path. And that takes a certain level of awareness. And I, as you know, because I employ, you know, almost 2,000 people now, I see that in young people all the time where, not even young people, I should say older people too, the people that are able to adapt and change, are able to grow with a business over a long period of time, and are continually allowing their hard work and their effort speak for itself, and not constantly questioning, you know, you know, where they're supposed to be because they know where they have to be. There's a big difference between those people and people who arrive, and I see it all the time, who, you know, we're a very cool company and we're a fast-moving company, and after a year of being here, they want to know, you know, so what have you done for me lately? And what is their next step? Mm-hmm. As opposed to just, you know, putting your nose to the grind and letting your results and letting your hard work determine and just keep an open heart and wait for your opportunity. Be very patient and be very pure with your intentions of what you want to do and creating that purpose in your life. I really believe that those are the people that always rise to the top. And I see it over and over again, well, here and, you know, outside as well. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense, and I think it's a perfect and poetic way to wrap up our conversation. Bruce, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share some of your insights with our listeners here at The Unmistakable Creative. This has been really cool, and you know, for those of you guys who haven't read this book, it's one of the best books I've read this year, for sure.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to quote you on that.
And for those of you guys listening, we'll wrap the show with that. Today's episode of The Unmistakable Creative has been brought to you by Sells. That's SELZ.com. Sells gives you the freedom to sell from any website quickly with no programming, no special templates or special themes needed, while giving your customer a completely seamless experience.
Thanks for listening in on another candid conversation at The Unmistakable Creative. Embrace your inner misfit. Express your creative voice. And remember, the goal isn't to live forever, but to create something that will.